Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.
Wow, wow, that is a public service announcement from NASGA, National Association to Stop Guardianship Abuse. We thank them for letting us use their commercial. Anyway, good evening, everyone. Today is December 16th, 2020. You're listening to Faceless Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed Channel, The Inside Scoop. I am Luann Fleming, and I'm with my other co-host tonight. Hillary Hogue is with us. Hillary?
Good evening, everyone.
Say hello, everybody. Good, great. So that's Hillary Hogue. We have Marcy Freeman joining us tonight as well.
Hi, everybody.
Marcy, there you go.
Yep.
Go ahead, Marcy.
Before you start, I wanted to bring light to the media advisory in Disney. This is going to be in Disney World, I guess, Orlando. The guardianship case for Lund guardianship case, and he is the grandson of Walt Disney. Going to be, for media coverage and advisory, the attorneys for Bradford Lund, grandson of Walt Disney, to hold a telephonic press conference calling on the Judicial Commission to remove Superior Court Judge David J. Cowan from bench for alleged multiple violations of the judicial canons of ethics. So this is going to be huge because this is going to bring a lot of exposure. And I just wanted you to know that.
Right. And if I could just chime in on that, Marcy, thank you for bringing that up. The hearing, it'll be a telephonic hearing. It's tomorrow. And it depends what time zone you're in. If you're in the Eastern time zone, it'll be at 2 o'clock. Obviously, it'll be at 11 o'clock in California and I believe 1 o'clock in Colorado. And the phone number, and I'm sure Luann will post it, is to call in is 877-271-1828. And the passcode is tomorrow's date, 12-17-2020. And I'll repeat that towards the midway of Luann's show.
Yeah. And send me a text, too, before I get ready to start, because sometimes I get too many phone calls. Anyway, that's excellent information. Let's see. We've got Robin Austin that just joined us. Robin, can you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. So happy that you can join us.
Great.
Hi, Robin.
We have a full house tonight, and so please, try not to speak over anyone, and make sure, yourself when you're not speaking, okay? Don't talk over anybody. And our shows, if anybody wants to find them, they're at the Hidden Truth Revealed channel on Blog Talk Radio. There's all of our links if you want to share them or whatever you want to do with them. And then we will be taking in phone calls probably later on in the show in about 40 minutes or so. And to do that, you call the number 845-241-9962, 845-241-9962, if you have a question or a comment. And we are live on the air, so I just want everybody to know that. So we have got a really cool show tonight, and we scheduled it for an hour and a half. So we have an exciting guest that Marcy Friedman has been telling me about, and she is an attorney out in Florida, and she's an estate planning and probate attorney. Her name is Sandy Boydron, and she's licensed to practice in Florida. Ms. Boydron focuses her areas of practice on wills, trust, and estate planning, probate administration, and special needs planning. Ms. Boydron is particularly involved in supporting special needs families to help them create long-term plans. And tonight, and we're going to be focusing on this a lot tonight, and it's the importance of estate planning. We have essential living documents and incapacity planning, establishing your last wishes and making a beneficiary designation, starting to probate, key points to know, and also she says at the end of the year checklist, get your house in order. And Sandy is she's from Spectrum Law Firm, Miami. So I tell you what, we're going to have a full show tonight, and so I just wanted to put that blurb out there. Anyway, let's go ahead and welcome her on. Let me see if I can find where she's at on here. So,
hi, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for having me.
Great.
Hi, Sandy.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And Marcy and I have been talking quite a bit about this this week, about you and how you are really helping, you know, you can help other families out that are stuck into an abusive guardianship, and you've been doing this for how long? Can you kind of give us an idea how long you've been an attorney and why you become involved being an attorney?
So this is my sixth year in practice. Becoming an attorney was, this is like my third career. I started off in the nonprofit world, working with families who were dealing with the courts. And I then shifted into education, and I was a public school teacher for about almost 8 years, about six and a half, seven, eighth year, yes. So, you know, going into law was something that I wanted to do for a little bit of time. But it took me a while to get there because I had other life events going on at the time. But becoming a lawyer was mostly because I wanted to work in my community. My family's from Haiti, and a lot of my family members and folks who have gone through the courts who did not have attorneys who spoke Creole and could address their issues, I found that that was a need. And so that's the area that I wanted to focus on, is helping folks in my community. But now, because I have a nephew who has autism, I've now found myself working with families in the autism community, dealing with guardianship, estate planning, and long-term care planning for special needs. So, you know, it's something that is really close to me, and my practice focuses heavily on working with families to help them plan and prepare.
Fantastic. Wow. Thank you so much for being on the show.
We've had a lot of families on our show, and, you know, we've been doing our shows for about 5 years, almost 5 years next year, and we've had a lot of families with special needs that have come on, and the routine that we usually see, and I'm not going to say that all this goes into every single courtroom, but the majority of the courtroom people that we have on our show is that some of these special needs children, they get large settlements for something that happened to them, for some kind of negligence. And then after that,
right,
an attorney, a public administrator, is usually put in place, and then they get paid real big amount of money, and then it's put into a special needs trust. But most of the time, they ignore these children, and they spend most of the money on themselves or give them a big, huge fee. So what can you talk about that? I mean, I know it's wrong and all that, but what do you do about that?
I think at its core, the thing that people need to focus on is planning for the unexpected. We oftentimes think about planning for things that we know are coming, like special events in our lives and things that we want to accomplish in our careers, but we don't often plan for things that we can't really expect to happen. And a lot of times with children with special needs, you know, families have so many things that they're dealing with that the focus is not on, well, what are we going to do 3 years from now, 5 years from now, and what are we going to do if something happens right now? If my kid gets into an accident or has some kind of problem or a medical disability and things of that sort. So the planning piece is critical. And that's why, you know, most of the conversation I'm going to have tonight is about how can you put little things in place right now, today, tomorrow, the next day, so that you can preserve certain things for your children and not have to go through some of these lengthy and troublesome court processes. But even if you have to go through those processes, having certain things already in place that will protect your children's monies and that will protect your money if you want to leave things in a life insurance or other policies.
Okay. Right.
So,
thank you, Luann. I found there are two families that I'm trying and tried to help, and it's been a disaster. I'll tell you about the first case. It's with Ramon Rojas in Hillsborough County. Now he's in Highlands County. He was basically deprived of oxygen in the hospital. He's total care, and his mother and father have been taking care of him and devoting their life willingly to assist him. The settlement, it wasn't a lot. It was like maybe $300,000, and over someone's lifetime, that's basically nothing. But point of the story is they went through a really bad divorce, and the magistrate, Mrs. Rojas, went to become her son's power of attorney, guardian, and instead of appointing one of the parents, which is what they wanted, the magistrate appointed a for-profit professional guardian. At one point, this guardian said to the mother, "I don't care if I have to put a noose around your neck. I'll do whatever to get your son out of your house," which, of course, happened.
Wow.
And briefly, another case, and this case, at least the mother has counsel, but her son, who's 28, Thomas Booker, lived at home, no problems, no drama, no police, nothing. But a lot of the disabled community, the parents are told that they have to, when your child becomes of age, they have got to go and become their child's guardian advocate. Well, she went to do that, and it was turned around. And now this young gentleman is with a guardian, and she cannot seem, both families, guardians removed. So I think a lot of these people who are involved with dealing with members of our community who are mentally or physically or both handicapped, they are telling parents, oh, no, you've got to go to the court and become their guardian advocate or power of attorney, whatever, and then it is just turned around and their life is just misery. So do you have any advice?
Yes.
So in a lot of these situations that I would describe as just outright abusive, I think it's important for folks to reach out to these community leaders and activists and folks who are working, much like those of you that are on this call right now, to help folks get out of these situations. Because part of the problem is oftentimes people fall into these scenarios and they feel helpless, and they feel like there's no one that can help them. However, you got to bring light to these situations because, unfortunately, if something goes wrong in that process and there's no one to advocate and stand for, it's problematic. So that's when you want to reach out to other attorneys. You want to reach out to these community leaders and activists and organizations, the media, you know, whoever you can, because the unfortunate part of those situations is it happens every day. And I don't know necessarily
that
I can tell you. I'm sorry.
Right. And you honestly, I don't know you, but you just sound so genuine and just so nice. And you sound like you have a huge heart, which I'm sure you do. But you know what? We have reached out with these two cases to, none of the ADA accommodations were made, you know, disability rights, they started to help, and they said, "Well, this is out of our jurisdiction." And you know, these two families, they're not impoverished, but they are working so hard just to keep a roof over their heads. And I feel that
right.
there's a lot with the services that are given that these guardians, they make money from, you know?
Wow.
So they're poor, yeah. but yet they get services.
That's the question I have for you. Yeah, Sandy, that's the question I have for you is, so what is the importance of estate planning when we see a lot of these cases?
Right.
A lot of people have done their estate planning, and they still end up in probate courts, and they still get their properties looted or taken away, and the children or the disabled children or the elderly, they're put into nursing homes
right.
and institutions. So what is the importance of estate planning?
So I can start with the elderly perspective because I've had a number of situations where I've had clients who didn't have planning, and I can start with what goes wrong when you don't. So as an example, I have an elderly client. She has six figures tucked away in the bank. She has multiple pieces of property. She has all of these other financial investments. And because she did not have any planning in place, of course, a guardianship had to be put into play. Now, thankfully, in her instance, a family member who is trustworthy and is handling her affairs and taking care of her is able to do that. But in the instance where there would be a public or, you know, other guardian appointed that is non-family or even non-caring about this family member, you could see where all of these properties would likely be sold. All of these assets
yeah.
would be depleted, and she would have nothing. So where estate planning steps in is this. Let's say this woman instead had a living trust in place, or even at the bare minimum, a power of attorney or healthcare designation. Those key documents could ensure that she has the decision making for who is going to manage her financial accounts, what she wants done with her property, what she wants done with any investments that she has, and whether or not she wants to sell or keep or distribute any of the things that she owns, and what her specific wishes are when it comes to her possessions. Because when you think of it, when someone goes into a guardianship, the courts and the people appointed are the ones making the decisions on what happens to your personal belongings. And that means everything. Down to the cell phone
and
that you may own.
Right, mm-hmm. It does. And with all respect, I know that you are on our side, and we love having attorneys on. We had Leslie Federico's on. We've had Vita Ropo.
Right.
But anyone who has had issues with probate court, as I did with my father, the first thing, as soon as an emergency temporary guardianship is put into place ex parte
right.
without substantiating any of the issues or speaking to the alleged, the POA is suspended. And
wow.
we've seen it in Florida hundreds of times. And I always say, and I really don't want to overspeak more than I do to give everyone their fair
right.
Time, but my father in 2003 got up, he took a shower, he put on a suit. He drove to his attorney's office in Winter Park, and he knew what he wanted. He was clear as a bell, and in 2017, the documents that my father paid for and was content that his wishes would be respected and granted was thrown out like a piece of toilet paper. So, I mean,
yeah.
the only document that I've seen that I really love is the preemie guardian. For some reason in Florida, it's really
yeah.
respected. Do you do those as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
And I think one of the things that tends to happen is we do focus mainly on powers of attorney and you know other estate planning documents, but preemie guardian is something that goes under the radar for most folks in planning.
Right.
And if you have that in place, that is a great indicator of this is the person that is my wish to serve in the event that I become incapacitated. And those
mm-hmm.
documents, depending on what jurisdiction you're in, will be recorded with the court. So the moment
exactly.
some paperwork is submitted that says this person needs to have a guardianship in place, that pre-need guardian is triggered. So that,
and
if I were to
yeah.
surpass all of the other documents, would be critical.
And do you suggest naming more than one person on a pre-need guardian document?
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons why. Number one, if you only have one or two people listed and those folks are maybe in the same age bracket or something happens to both of those folks, guess what? You're back to the regular court process.
Yeah.
You're possibly back to a public guardian or some other court-appointed guardian. So, yes, you should always have multiple alternates whenever you have any documents, including power of attorney and pre-need guardian.
So
I have a question.
So when you have
Cindy,
power of attorney,
so you could actually do
a couple powers of attorney, or how does that work? I mean, I have my sister as a power of attorney, but you know, it was overwritten. You know.
So the interesting part about a power of attorney document and a healthcare document is that you can have alternates, you can have people serving together, you know, co-agents. You can dictate what types of powers you want that individual to have. So it's really about the language of these documents. And sometimes I've found difficulty because folks will try to prepare documents on their own, or folks don't account for the what if. What if my agent passes away or is unable to serve? What if all of my agents pass away? What if I don't own this particular asset or, you know, item at the time that I'm incapacitated? What are the other circumstances that I need to put into place and consider? So it's important for documents to not only have what you want right now, but to account for what could potentially happen down the line. And that's why planning is at the core of all of this.
Can I ask you something,
Cindy? And I know that you have an agenda to follow because you have a lot to inform us, and I don't want to bring my case in this, but I do have one question. Is it legal for a person that has already had a will naming their next of kin, and when they go to the court, the court-appointed attorney prepares the power of attorney during incapacitation and has the person sign it after she has been after the person has been evaluated having Alzheimer's and dementia. Is that legal? Because this is happening a lot.
Those types of things are very tricky situations, because one of the keys is whether or not the person has capacity at the time that they prepare their documents. And the reason oftentimes certain documents might be kicked out is because it's determined at a later time that that person at the time of signing those documents didn't have the capacity. So technically speaking, what you're saying is this person wasn't capable.
Anyone that goes to guardianship has to be evaluated by three court-appointed committee members. And that's how they know whether the person who's seeking guardianship is really to protect them or not. If he or she, I'm just hypothetically saying, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's and dementia and not capable of making independent decisions, and the court-appointed attorney and does not pay attention to the committee members and still goes and has her sign or him sign a power of attorney, prepares for it, and charges twice, is that legal? During incapacitation...
That does not sound legal based upon the information that you're providing, because you're telling me that this person doesn't have the capability to make a decision like that for themselves.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And how would we, Sandy, how would we be able to say that there's like a 55 or 60-year-old man that wants to leave his whole estate to his daughter? How would he be able to... I mean, should he be doing like a videotape of himself saying, hey, I'm sound of mind, I'm here with my doctor, and there's nothing wrong with me, and I want to make this will known, and I'm going to give it to the bank, I'm going to give it to my daughters, I'm going to give it to whoever. Do you think that's a good idea?
So depending on the jurisdiction that you're in, every jurisdiction has different rules and requirements for what needs to be done in order for a will to be effective. So I can speak about Florida and how we do our documents. The key is having two witnesses attest that he is capable of making that decision for himself based upon the information that the attorney asks, a notary present as well. And there are a series of questions that you will ask to ensure that this person is capable. So in my example, I would say when I meet with a client, no matter the age, I'm asking them all kinds of questions and I'm keeping documentation on that. Part is somebody could later on contest this and say, well, my dad or my mom was not capable at the time. So it's up to me as the attorney to be able to pull my documentation to show, well, I did question them. And then I also presented the information before two witnesses and a notary. And it was certified at that time that he was capable. He understood what these documents were providing. He intended these to be his last wishes. And we verified this in the presence of two neutral individuals as well as a notary public. So those are the keys for that type of situation. And so for the individual, it's always making sure that you try to do this stuff when you are, you know, able to, when you are clear of mind and you're able to identify and articulate what it is that you want. The older that someone is, I personally will typically have extra safeguards in place. I ask more questions. I may have other witnesses present. Sometimes I ask other attorneys to sit in. And, you know, I inform my client, look, I just want to make sure that these are your wishes. If family members want to be a part of the conversation, I let them know, look, I need to speak with this individual on their own first. So as an attorney, it's important for me to put safeguards in place. As individuals who might want their family members to get documents done, you want to make sure that this individual has an opportunity to make their wishes known to the attorney of their choice while they're still able to do so and not wait too late.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Good information. So what would you suggest? So go ahead, Marcy.
No, but the other side, that is in the real world, and that is your, I can tell how ethical you are. Unfortunately, this is not what a lot of victims have gone through and we have seen. So this is why it's so important to hear everything that you really have to say tonight, because it is important that people do protect themselves.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, what else can families do to protect themselves? Because, you know, we went down the checklist in my family and we did a trust, we did a will, we did POA, we did got the right attorneys, we thought for sure we would never end up in probate, and boy did we end up in there and we lost everything. So what can you do to I would never do a trust ever again. I mean, after what I've seen and what I've heard. So talk a little bit about the trust, the irrevocable trust. Do you still think that some hold up in court? Or do you think they aren't worth a penny, you know, the paper they're written on?
So I'm going to say this about any planning. One of the keys is making sure that you understand why you're doing different things. Oftentimes families will do a trust because maybe they want to spread out wealth over generations, or maybe they want to be able to manage funds after they pass away and control, you know, how much, you know, their children or their family members will receive over time. But if you do some other things before getting to that point, there are some ways to avoid other problems. So as an example, I talk a lot with families about beneficiary designations and the importance of them and having contingent beneficiaries. Because the beauty is, no matter the documents you have, if you have beneficiary designations on all of your financial accounts, and I'm talking bank accounts, I'm talking about investment accounts, stocks and bonds and those types of things, if you have beneficiary designations and you ensure that there are some backup beneficiaries in a sense to protect yourself, then those individuals will get those funds outright. That doesn't go through paperwork. That doesn't go through the courts. It goes to the individuals that you name. And if you're concerned about maybe something happening to that individual, then you need to talk to the individual that manages your financial accounts and see if you can put some contingent
beneficiaries. So if something happens to this person, this is where I want it to go. Where sometimes documents like trusts or wills go wrong is they don't account for the next level. So as an example, in a trust, if my trustee is no longer, and then the next level trustee, I don't have an alternate, then what have you done? You've basically left a void there that creates an opening for the courts to kick in. If I have a will and I have a personal representative that I'm not too sure about, but I appoint them anyway, then we're starting with a problem. So it's choosing people that you trust, but also potentially having backups, you know, alternates that will step in the event that, you know, the person that I originally had is no longer. Most of the time when I see conflicts in court, it's because there's issues. So it could be maybe the will was done when the person was 91. Well, already that could be a red flag because that's going to be questions of were they capable at the time. Maybe there are some documents that weren't transferred. I recently had an issue where there is a trust, there is a will, there are all kinds of documents, but there were certain assets that were never transferred to the trust. And the trust has to take title to certain documents in order for it to control those documents, right? So if I have a bank account and I want those funds to pour into my trust and I haven't retitled those accounts, guess what? Those accounts have nothing to do with the trust. So I have to have processes done in order for those funds to be transferred into the title of the trust. So sometimes the reason that you end up in the courts, even after you've prepared your documents, is sometimes there's a missing piece. And so that's the key in looking back over the things that you've done and saying, all right, what happens if what I have listed here doesn't apply? What happens if that trustee is not there, that beneficiary is not there, that personal representative is not there? That's when a lot of times these court processes will kick in. I'm trying to think if there's like another situation that you can give me and I can maybe clarify, you know, please let me know.
Okay. That's good. I really think about how some of the families, the courts will sit there and say that you can't be a guardian to your mother because you've exploited them. And a lot of these people will fight these court-appointed attorneys will fight you and say, you've exploited your mom, we have to be in charge. How can we stop
right.
the isolation going between those family members? You know, I've seen it often to where they will take the mother, they will take the father, and you're not able to
right.
see them. I mean, what can families do to be with their loved ones during this time?
It's an extremely difficult thing, and I couldn't possibly give you one answer to that question. What I will say is this: every single situation has something that you can touch on to try to bring some light to it. Oftentimes, even when the court process might fail you, I say turn to all of the other resources that you may have. You got to speak it to the rooftops. And let every person know that you can, because there's someone out there that may be able to give you an outlet. It may be that one attorney that can step in and say, hey, something's wrong here, I'm going to fight it. It may be that one advocate in the community, but you just have to keep pushing at that, because I can't give you an answer to these court issues, because oftentimes even I as an attorney am battling the same thing that we're all talking about right now. And I have at least a handful of cases right now where we're in a battle and the court is not really helping us in that situation. So it's like I'm fighting by myself because I'm fighting against the system in a sense.
We're with you, sister. Yep, we are with you.
So tell us, Sandy, do any of these other attorneys, I mean, I've seen a lot of really good attorneys get bashed by some of these other attorneys that just complete overall of the whole case and get paid a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, have you been coming up with some attorneys that you're like, oh my God, I don't know about this one, or, you know,
I so wish one of my fellow attorneys who I've worked closely with on a few crazy, crazy cases where things just went left field and we were literally fighting against the masses. Because she and I could both tell you that, you know, we experience a lot of frustration in fighting the issues that we're talking about on this call tonight, because I've seen individuals go into a guardianship with ample money and come out of a guardianship with nothing. Mm-hmm. I've seen individuals be taken advantage of by attorneys, the system, the process, and the unfortunate part is many times the family either is not aware of how to maneuver the system, so time passes, and we miss key points where we can really fight certain parts under the law, or we have conflict within the family and we're not even able to get a footing because we can't get everybody on the same page. And so then the mm-hmm. system is able to swoop in and say, well, hey, you all are fighting, so here, we have a solution here. The system will settle.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't the law of the next of kin, say one person has just only one child and other family members try to come in and want to take over, and even dismiss the wills, the bank accounts, and they just come in, but the court appointed attorney, it's not doing right for the person. What happens there? Can those people get away with this? It's that ethical.
You know, I hate to say this answer, but this happens every day. And mm-hmm. while there are some of us out here that are in the battle and we are working to help families to try to get a footing and really do right by their loved ones, I can't tell you a story and say, oh, well, you know, the system works. It really doesn't. We've seen so much evidence of that. I just think we just have to keep educating ourselves, educating our families, trying to change the law of these processes. I know with guardianship, you know, there have been some minor tweaks in the law over the years, but obviously there's still a lot to go. I'm a personal proponent for trying to alleviate the extra level of stress on families who have children with special needs who become adults, having to go through this process to begin with. Like, I really feel like there should be simpler processes for them. I think the next push for those that are listening right now and those that are experiencing this is to find ways to push on the legislation that might make some changes in this system. I mean, I think that's the next level of this.
You know,
but as far as the court process, it's tough.
Yeah, right.
It is. And I'll just say that, gosh, you are a breath of fresh air, and I will be recommending you throughout Florida. But, you know, we have Marcy and a group of us, we've gone to Tallahassee. But you know what? We don't have the money to pay for lobbyists. You know,
right.
It's really, really hard. And it's from what I can see, it is an underground operation. People are not aware of the travesties that are happening in the court system, in probate court. So, I mean, we are blessed to have you working in probate.
Thank you so much.
It is absolutely
right. And
she's in the Miami area.
Do you do all of Florida, or do you just do the Miami area?
So I actually currently have cases throughout the state of Florida. I don't take a lot out of the Tri-County area of Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. I try not to go too far north, but on occasion I'm pulled in on a case where there is a weird conflict and they need an outsider. But as far as Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, I take a handful of cases as I go throughout the years because I do guardianship, probate, and estate planning. So I don't take a boatload of cases at any given time. I try to kind of, you know, take cases as I go along month to month. But what I will say is there are a good chunk of attorneys that are working in the system that are trying to do, you know, right by the clients. It's just a difficult environment to work in. You know, I do have some really great judges down in Miami-Dade and Broward and Palm Beach that are really doing the good fight. But
so could you kind of
that are really in purifying.
Like one day give us a list of good attorneys that we can refer some of the people to, because the people that come to us, I mean, they're crying on the phones. They've been isolated from their mother. Their mother's getting ready to pass. They're not allowed to see them. All their property's being taken. I mean, I've had some stories that we literally cried on these.
We're all victims for that. Yep.
Right. And if I could just say one thing, and I promise I'll be quiet, in the state of Florida, and this is what I do every single day of the week, is help victims of probate guardianship abuse. I can't even fill up my five fingers. We have two attorneys in the state of Florida that we can trust 80%. We are really held back with so many things because one attorney that we use, she has 70 clients because no one else will help and promote for restoration of rights. So, again, this is a Christmas miracle having you on the show.
Yeah. And Sandy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Hold
on.
I know
hold on,
you
Marcy.
Have your.
Go ahead.
I know
Marcy,
that you have your agenda and you had some key points that you wanted to speak about. And I know one of them was the guardianship and probate key points to know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was the end of the year checklist.
Go ahead and talk about that. And we'll take that. A guest in about 10 minutes. So go ahead and talk about that. It'd be great to know.
Yeah,
okay, great. So, some connectors between guardianship and probate that I just want to make sure our listeners understand is that when it comes to guardianship and probate, those processes are oftentimes things that a lot of people go through. However, there are some little things that you can do now. I focus heavily on beneficiaries, taking care of all accounts, because oftentimes I'll get these little cases where there's $5,000, $10,000, you know, whatever the amount that's in the bank. There's not a large sum, but it's enough that if you're trying to go through a probate process, you're going to spend three quarters of that just trying to get what you need. And so if you make sure that the folks that you love, that you want to have what you have, are on your accounts as payable on death or terminable on death or just as the person who is going to receive those funds, you alleviate that one thing that won't go through a court process because it's already addressed by operation of law. In terms of guardianship, same thing. There are some things that you can do while you are still capable to protect your assets in a way that, you know, if you had a joint account, for example, with someone, because sometimes it's helpful to make sure that you have some protection. And some folks like to have an agent handling their affairs. Sometimes folks like to have some representation. And so when you have things that are titled with more than one name, if need be, and you have things that have designations already, those things can't really be tapped into by the courts unless it's discovered that the asset is totally yours. Right? Those are some little things.
Sandy, say if you have a that has a bank account and you have their name on there, and that parent goes into guardianship, are they likely to come after that bank account?
So you have to be mindful of the way accounts are titled. You know, you just have to make sure that the way accounts are titled that you may have some representation. So I know as an example for some of my clients that receive Social Security funds for their children, as an example, the account is technically earmarked for the funds of the child, but their name is on the account as the representative that receives the funds. So it's a little bit different. Those types of situations, if the child is only receiving Social Security, you know, that's not going through the guardianship process. So for those of my guardianship clients who are only getting Social Security benefits, you know, they're not having to run those funds through any kind of guardianship review and oversight. You know, they just have to do their reporting, but they're not being restricted by the guardianship courts with those specific funds.
In terms of the court processes overall, what I need folks to understand is information on guardianship and probate processes is typically located on every single county's court website. And so if you want to understand the process and the forms and the information, you need to go to that county. So if you live in Miami-Dade County, for example, you go to their website, you look at the information on guardianship and probate, you can see potentially information on forms that are needed, you can see information on what is required for the process, because oftentimes we're not educated on what the process is, how much it should cost, what does it look like, how do you go through and maneuver through it. And so if you at least get educated on some of those basic things, even when you do go to an attorney, you'll have certain questions in mind already. There are a lot of resources on YouTube and on the internet in general that give you a walkthrough, that show you sample forms. A lot of counties, in particular in Florida, a lot of counties have sample forms. So that way you can kind of process for yourself, what is it that my loved one is going to go through, or what is it that I'm going to go through if I'm doing a probate for one of my loved ones? So if you understand those processes and if you kind of feed yourself that information, it alleviates the ability for someone to step in and just tell you anything. You know, even though we're attorneys, we're human beings. And so you're not always going to get a good person. You never know who you'll get. So you have to educate yourself before you walk into someone's office and say, hey, help me. I'm sorry, someone had a question. Well,
yeah, go ahead. Marcy, I think it was.
I think I'm going to keep it. I'm going to ask you privately on that one.
Yes, no problem.
My pencil's writing so fast, and I'm thinking, you know, I could just re-listen to this again. I'm like, gosh.
I want to give you a key resource that I love through the Florida Bar, and I'm pretty sure if you go to any state, you might be able to find certain resources and information. The Florida Bar has what they call consumer information pamphlets, and those pamphlets provide you with a good overview of processes. So as an example, they have a pamphlet called What is Guardianship? And it literally walks you through, it tells you the important terminology, it tells you how a person is determined to be incapacitated, who may serve. It goes through some basic things. So when you decide, hey, I want to go to an attorney and I want to hire them to handle this guardianship, you go equipped with some basic language and you can ask the right questions. Also, law libraries at the courthouses oftentimes will also have things like forms and books and materials, including online materials, where you can gather and obtain information on guardianship and probate and estate planning. So if you are having to go to an attorney or if you are having to get some assistance, you again can educate yourself. So check out your local law library at your local courthouse. That's another great resource.
But let me just, I, with all due respect, let me interject. Yes.
Go ahead, Hillary.
Let's say in Hillsborough in Tampa, the Elder Justice Office, it has pamphlets, but it doesn't give the whole story. It's all pro-guardianship.
Right.
It doesn't tell you that something bad might happen, that some of these
non-profits,
professional guardians, will take advantage of you. So I honestly, with all due respect, every complaint that anyone that I have met who's made a complaint to Florida Bar has never gone a step higher, and that the Florida Bar is there for one reason only, and you can, you know, disagree with me, and it is to protect their members.
Wow. And, I can't disagree with you because I do understand that that is something real that is happening to people right now. So I absolutely, I accept and embrace what you're saying because it is real. It's not a storyline or some extra fuzzy thing that someone says. I definitely appreciate that.
Wow.
It's real because the officers of the court, I'm not mentioning names, and I'm not saying that all of them are, but it has been my experience experience that they tweak it to benefit them, not the person that you're trying to protect, like your parent, like your vulnerable parent. And it's a tough one.
Yeah.
But we're all getting a lot smarter, and there's nothing better than the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
On paper.
Absolutely.
So that's
why judges are recusing themselves.
Yeah.
So
a lot of
while I do agree,
mm-hmm.
yes,
go
while
ahead.
I do agree that, you know, you may not get much information from the pamphlets because, yes, they are set up to just really give you certain basic core things. However, I will fully and wholeheartedly support my local law libraries, and I'm going to tell you why. A couple of years ago, I was doing a pro bono program at Miami-Dade Law Library, and I got to know their law librarian very, very well. And one of the resources that I realized that some of these law libraries offer is self-help services. And it's not self-help like, hey, just come here, a lawyer's going to help you. It's self-help as in we have everything that you need to educate yourself. And we're not talking watered down materials that are just, you know, a little skeleton. We're talking the actual books, the statutes, the rules, the guides that we as attorneys are held to, that we're supposed to be following, that the judges are supposed to follow. So in terms of educating yourself, I will say that the law libraries at these courthouses will give you more resource accessible to you, the public, than just saying, okay, I'm going to go to, you know, some of these, you know, legal services or the elder affairs or things of that sort. I will say that the law libraries are definitely a great resource.
Wow, that's good information.
Bingo.
Yeah. I know a friend of mine that said she spent most of her days at the libraries educating herself on all the laws. I mean, I was like, gosh almighty, how do you have fine time to do all that? But, yeah, that's really good.
I mean, as a young attorney, I definitely spent quite a bit of time there trying to kind of get my bearings and understand how these systems work, because in law school you learn about the books, you learn about the law, but how things are operating in practice, you know, I have to say, yes, there are a lot of things that happen that I'm just like, what in the world? This is not anywhere near what should be happening. However, our job is to make sure that we bring the light, that we completely fight as much as we can in whatever capability that we have, and align ourselves with folks who are on that same page. And that's the only thing that I can do.
Right.
Wow.
So before we take our caller in, what is the end of the year checklist? I mean, is this basically everything that you've talked about? Is there any more that you could add in there? If you could talk a little bit about that.
So the end of year checklist for me is something that I've been kind of building a little bit over the years. I've kind of taken information from different checklists that I've used with my clients, and I've said, all right, what are the key things that people need to organize and have in place and put them somewhere where someone they trust can grab this package of information that is developed from this checklist and be able to verify and double check and make sure that everything is in place. So I created this estate planning checklist. It's a compilation of a lot of information. And basically you can just go to my firm's website. You're just going to input your name and email. I'll circle back with you if you have any questions. But it's a checklist, literally, that just says all of the different things that you should try to compile and organize. Because if you're going to get your estate plan together, you have to get your information in order first. So that's why I say get your house in order, organize all of these important documents, forms, pieces of information on your assets and what you own, because if you have to fight over what you own with someone else, you want to have that identified. So you want to start gathering all of that information. So they can go to my firm's website and get that information. And if they have any questions, I'm offering myself up to, you know, have a little brief call with you if you have some questions about how to get your house in order.
That's great.
Yeah.
And if you need it interpreted in Spanish, I'll be glad to do it for you.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Marcy's really good at that. I mean, every time I come see Marcy, she's like, well, she's good. So Let's go ahead and take a caller. I think it was a 727 number. 727, you have a question or a comment?
This is Sue. I think it might be me.
Okay, yes. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Hi, Sue.
Okay, so,
hi,
Hillary. Thank you for inviting me on.
Uh-huh.
Thank you so much for what you do. I wish that you were in Pinellas County because we definitely need people like you and your knowledge and passion in this realm. But a couple
thank
of
you.
Things. You're welcome. But a couple of things that come to mind just in frustration with the system and how it's set up is, you know, everybody's supposed to be looking out for the best interest of the ward. I like to call him my father. But
right.
even as court-appointed attorney, who, you know, you wonder who's really on what side of this debate and these problems. But as people start to bill an estate and collect these funds, they really cannot and are not for your loved one because if they were to help these people restore their rights and their freedom, they don't get paid. So I can't believe a system that's set up
right.
to just put these people into guardianship and fleece their estate. And literally, if they were to help them and win their capacity and rights back, it's counterintuitive
right.
to them having the ability to get paid. And if they were a good public defender,
yes.
I wouldn't have a problem with them being compensated and getting paid. But the system isn't
right.
even set up for such a basic premise. And I think it's just so ridiculous.
Corrupt. Yep.
Yeah, you make a really good point.
I can definitely relate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can definitely relate to your point because I've had a number of situations where we were, when I say we, my client who's trying to be appointed is wondering what the interest is of this particular attorney. Now, again, attorneys are human beings. We already know they're going to come in all faces. But, you know, I definitely can appreciate the fact that the person that should be advocating on behalf of the ward really should be advocating on behalf of the ward. Like, there shouldn't even be a question mark. You know, I don't really know what to say to that. But I will say that you just need to make sure that you make that information known. Put it on the record in whatever way that you can. I've had
the other thing I wanted to ask you about. Is when we talk to people about the case and I try to advocate to other people and I say, you know, you have to make sure that you cross your T's and dot your I's, and they go, oh, no, we're all set. I have a power of attorney. I said, no, we have one of those. And they said, oh, no, we had a good elder law attorney. We have a trust. I said, no, we had one of those. But, you know, they strip you of the power of attorney. They take the ward and they take away their right to contract, so they tie their hands behind their back. Then in our situation, the person that took care of my blind mother and my deaf father for 5 years, I was deemed an exploiter, which now DCF had filed the case against my father and me, and now an investigation was ensued for 10 months, and I've been cleared of that allegation by my brother that lives 1,500 miles away and never took care of my parents for 5 minutes ever. But it doesn't unring the bell. Hillary and I were talking about this earlier, and I said, even though the investigation is closed, that doesn't make the case go away. That doesn't make DCF go away. That doesn't make the ETG go away. And, you know, it's just, it's so frustrating because you have to, you know, fight this and be guilty until proven innocent. And not only are they fleecing the ward's estate, but anybody that's trying to advocate for the ward and advocate for yourself are being, you know, driven to bankruptcy in the process. And then how do you recoup any of those monies?
That's a very good question. Go ahead.
I can't tell you how many situations I've had where your frustration and my frustration are one and the same. You know, I think ultimately I think this radio show alone is a testament to the importance of how we need to share this information and collect ourselves and fight together. Because as an attorney, I experience what you're talking about just from a different perspective, and it frustrates me. So I definitely can relate to what you're feeling. And I hate that I laugh because it's like while you're saying this, I'm thinking of situations that I've sat in as an attorney asking the same exact questions. So, you know, I definitely do understand your frustration. And I think, you know, I don't know if there are any groups that work together and trying to kind of build some kind of collective to fight against this, aside from, you know, this radio show. But I definitely think we need to have collectives of attorneys and individuals who are dealing with the situation that are both experiencing the same frustrations to find a way to make changes because it needs to change.
Right. And another The question I want to ask to you, though, is do you notice that some of the judges just go mostly towards what the court appointers are talking about? They don't really have the family speaking at all, and they just kind of like the judges go along with the court appointed attorneys and let them do almost anything. Do you see that all the time? Like,
the petitioner.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I can only say that I've had an experience like that once, where I blatantly felt like the judge was not in any way, shape, or form hearing anything that was being said and was just going for whatever was said on that end. Most of my other situations, I've thankfully had a judge that I felt like was hearing what was going on. I think the difficulty comes down to when they do appoint a court-appointed attorney, a lot of times it's seen or it's perceived that these attorneys are, you know, best in the business and they're doing all these great things in the community. And again, you all are talking about the experiences that you're having with these best in the business attorneys. So, you know, I think it comes down to a level of these relationships that are built, and some of these attorneys are on, you know, like these wheels or, you know, whatever the program is that allows them to continuously be appointed. So, you know, that is also a point of change. You know, finding ways to change that system of where they appoint the same people. Because you see the names. It's the same attorneys over and over that will get appointed in some of these cases that
and
we find the same problems
in. Right.
Yeah.
And
ATG.
Pardon? I personally think that there is a lot of judges that, and I can't say all of them because, you know, I don't know all of them, but from what I've heard from the complaints on our radio show is that these judges just do not move an inch for the families. I mean, you could blatantly see that these people are suffering and they're screaming, please get me out of guardianship. And the judges say, nope, can't do that. I'm sorry. We're not going to talk about that today. I mean, this is really sad when we have people come into our show and they're crying to us saying, I just want to get out of guardianship, but the judge won't listen to me. They won't even let me speak.
Right.
I mean, do you see
the
time happen?
If I could interject.
Yeah, go ahead,
Taylor. Thank you. We have Sue on the phone, and I always call what she and other families have gone through and are going through homegrown terrorism.
Wow.
And her father and her 15-year-old son and her other son, Andrew, are being terrorized by members of the court. And it's not because of family dysfunction might bring it in. Her brother might have gotten the ball rolling. And again, you are a good attorney, and I can say that with confidence. But the court-appointed and the attorneys for the petitioner, they kept that ball rolling, and they will not let go until all the money is gone.
The 3 weeks, here's a perfect example, without getting into any semantics. My father's legally deaf. He was a firefighter. He was in World War II in Korea. He's 92 years old. So nobody can argue with my father's handicap. If he was a blind person, nobody would ask him to read a contract or else he was, you know, out of luck. We fought for 3 weeks to get my father ADA accommodations when his court-appointed attorney decided he needed to go through a whole nother series of evaluations after he already did the three-committee report, and he did fairly well. And I fought and I fought and I advocated for my father for ADA accommodations. We got one court order that the judge finally acquiesced as after everybody else fought against my dad getting it. Then we had to go out and define what it would look like because it was going to be cart that we would do with Zoom and we would have to pay for it. We have to have another case management status to get the judge to sign off on it. And after those two case managements, my father paying for everybody to meet and us agreeing that we needed ADA, two of the three committee members recused themselves because they just can't imagine how they could do their job with these horrible conditions that are only being introduced because of the horrible data. And this is a federal law. This is a federal right that my father deserves. And the court and the judge are against providing my father ADA.
Yeah, how
so
can that be?
This is beyond corruption.
Yeah. So can you talk about that a little bit, about the ADA? Do you have ADAs that come into the probate courts? And do you recommend
they have to. It's a law.
In terms of the accommodations, it's supposed to be there's a connector at each courthouse that provides you with whatever the accommodations are. There's a separate individual that is designated. Mm-hmm. I'm not too familiar with process and how they set up any accommodations, because most of the time I haven't really had most of my clients that have certain disabilities didn't have to appear because of the nature of their disability, and you know, those were blatant situations where guardianship was necessary based upon these conditions, because I deal with a lot of autism situations, but you know, in the event of somebody who obviously could be present and just needs the extra assistance, that is federal law. So those types of violations, I mean, there are processes to deal with that kind of violation. That's not something that should be happening if someone is legitimately contacting the court and saying, hey, I have this particular disability and I need the accommodations.
But I'm just highlighting that happens. Because when we're talking about, you know, studying these laws and knowing what our rights are, this is an uphill battle, but to have to fight for something that would be such a basic fundamental right of my father just shows how completely corrupt and insane this whole court system is in probate. At least in Pinellas County, we only have two probate judges, and you've got the ETG and the attorney that represents them, and not one of them. How can you say that they're advocating, and I don't mean you personally, are advocating for the ward when they fight against giving them an accommodation? I mean, it just highlights to me that they have no alliance to my father, to the ward. They want to set them up to fail. If he passes two of the three examinations, he would win, they would lose, and they will not allow something like that to happen.
Wow.
Right.
That's disturbing on so many levels.
Americans with Disability Act is such a huge thing, and it is such a big law. And the fact that in courtrooms and Zoom hearings throughout the state and the country, they are not accommodating people with hearing disabilities, people who are blind or legally blind, even translators. I had to fight to get a translator, a Spanish translator, in a probate hearing. The person said, oh, no, we only do them for criminal cases.
Oh, wow.
I said, being put in a guardianship, you lose every single right. Every single right.
And Hillary, excuse me,
mm-hmm. and you've never committed a crime. So this is huge.
Right.
Wow.
Yes, Marcy.
I'd like to add to that, because like Hillary said, the American Disability Act, I read that it's not only people with blind, but it's also people suffering from Alzheimer's, dementia, language barriers, all of that. And they're not protecting them. That's why the judges are recusing
themselves. Yeah, but shouldn't that be pertained to the ward themselves? Because wards are the same thing. A ward to the state has the same disabilities. They should all be protected by the ADA.
By the way,
they're not.
They're not being protected. They're not going by the American disability law. That's why they try. I think that's That's what's going on with my mother's case. You just enlightened me.
Yeah.
I don't even want to talk about it. I get it now.
Yeah,
well, I think as advocates, and Sandy, you brought up a very, very good point, because through the history that I've been in the show with Luann and Hillary for the past 3 years, people are getting confused. Oh, they incapacitate them, but they're not really incapacitated. Or they are incapacitated medically, but they don't incapacitate them. So it's done
right,
according to what fits them in order to isolate, over-medicate, and rape the estate, because that's what's going
right
on.
Yeah. And it's
well,
so
and they're good at this. They've gotten away with this for 15 or 20 years. I mean, when you were talking earlier about setting up the estate in a way that, you know, you would think that it would be sort of foolproof, we have a power of attorney. We have a trust. My father and I are co-trustees. I'm sure you're familiar.
Right.
This is a pretty standard trust. It talks about the least restrictive means, that if there's a person
right
and a loved one that will take care of you, that we don't need probate. We don't need the courts. We don't need anything.
Right.
That's why the recipe for success for these people is to incapacitate the ward. You tie their hands behind their back. You take away their right to contract. You call somebody like me an exploiter. I'm a bad fiduciary,
yeah,
and now the state has to step in and take over. These documents mean nothing in the end. We had a very good elder law attorney that drafted these documents for my parents. He's now
right
a judge. He's a good judge, not one of these guys. But these documents
gotcha
can't protect us anymore because they just ripped them apart. They just
yeah
change you into certain characters. Every time I turn around, I'm a new character. First I was an exploiter.
Yeah.
Then I was an isolator. Now I'm going to be charged with undue influence of my parents 5-6 years ago. I never even know
wow
what I'm going to be next week. I feel like I'm Sybil.
You know, and
oh
that's
gosh
what happens.
Well, the more they go after you,
And I tell you, that happened mm-hmm to my family. We were in there, and we were known as raping my mother financially. We were in there knowing
oh, wow
that they removed my sister and I, all the trustees off the trust. They put in a new public administrator, and then they said my sister and I are good enough to be a co-guardian of my mom. But see, that's how we feel as being a victim in this whole thing, because we weren't the only trustees, but we were co-guardians. We were the exploiters. We were the raping our mom
right
financially. We were, you know, you get called everything when you know that's not the truth. So aren't
right
these family members, like Marcy says, aren't these family members supposed to be the number one on the list to become that guardian in rule, that guardian next? But we don't see that happening. We see them fighting against the families not to become
yeah
any of those so they can gain control of the estate.
That's what they do.
There's
a priority listing. There are laws that address, you know, who has priority and how they make the selection. The tricky part is always, you know, if you don't have a pre-need guardian, for example, that person obviously doesn't exist in terms of priority for your wishes. But when it comes to the court, you know, typically we go with family members first, and
then we start to see
if there's other, daughter, son, mother,
yeah,
father, you know, you go down the lines. I usually don't see them stepping outside of those lines unless there's an issue. But again, if you're talking about other agencies involved too, sometimes if DCF or some other agency comes into play, elder law, abuse, or anything like that, that completely flips the switch. And so now you have the opening for court appointed. That's where another tricky point comes in.
Yeah.
Well,
and I think the best thing to do is somehow you have to guide your family totally out of a whole arena of probate. I'm not sure exactly how to do that yet, because I personally say void everything, but there's always that family member or a hospital that gets involved, or somebody's going to get involved. You know,
right,
have
you
seen
can
many
minimize
cases where the
probate
hospital's involved? Uh-huh. Go ahead.
You can minimize probate in many instances, but sometimes there are some things that just create an unavoidable situation where you end up in probate, mostly because, you know, maybe all of the bases aren't covered. But
You had a question about the hospitals?
Yeah, have you seen hospitals get involved? I know a lot of people that come on our radio show, these people went into the hospital, and then before you know it, the hospitals were asking questions, is this person able to take care of themselves? And before you know it, they were put into a guardianship. Have you seen a lot of that?
I have not seen a lot of that. I have had a few instances where there was an issue and the person went into the hospital and the hospital would do like an elder abuse report. And so what that tends to trigger, again, is a court process, and sometimes they'll appoint a guardian in that instance that is court appointed and not a family member, because there's some allegations and or neglect or abuse, abandonment. Most times it comes out where it's not the family member. Nobody did anything to them. They're just, you know, they were living on their own and, you know, a little bit isolated from family. But hospitals, I haven't seen too involved in this process. I don't know if any other families have dealt with that a lot, but I haven't had that personally.
Basically, and again, my dad was put into a guardianship. I miraculously got him out. I would have cut my arms and legs off to keep him from going into a for-profit guardianship.
We signed
a settlement agreement. So what I do is from really, besides taking care of my dad who's living with me and my two young sons, I research. And I can tell you honestly that whether it's Tallahassee, Leon, Suwannee, Lake, Pinellas, Hillsboro, you have attorneys that this is all they do. You have John A. Williams. You have Lee Carr. They work for the hospitals. Rebecca Fairley, I'm sure you know, who was arrested, was working with the hospitals. If someone is in a hospital or a rehab and they're late on their bill and there's no one that they can seem to find next of kin, even if they can, they contact an attorney. That attorney gets remuneration. They get paid $10,000, $15,000, and it's simply for one outcome only, to put that person in a for-profit guardianship in order to either remove them from the facility or to keep them there, but to make sure that their bill is paid and or there is Medicaid planning. So it is rampant. And that may be in 2021 or my next lifetime is what I'll focus on, because it is an underground operation.
And I know that I know that we ourselves are going to be taking a two-week break from this radio show, and we're going to give everybody off the holidays that they all have earned. I mean, you guys, Marcy, I mean, Hillary, Robin, are you still there?
Robin went to sleep.
Sorry, no, I had trouble with my phone. Yes, I am still here.
Oh, I went before we're done. Someone posted in one of the, I think a AAAPG posted a cartoon, and it has, isn't it Chambers? It has the judge, and then it has the attorneys on both sides, and then it's got a judge saying, the jury is instructed to ignore common sense, logic, justice, and the big picture, and consider only the merit and the merit and technical loopholes presented to you by these people who are paid to conceal the truth.
Wow.
And
we've got another caller. Let's bring on a 720 number. We have a 720 number that you have a question or a comment?
It's Scarlett. How are you, Luann?
Hi, Scarlett. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm just listening to everything, and I applaud the attorney who is standing up and against the rest of the pack of wolves out there. I'm sure it's not easy, you know.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I wish we had someone like that here in Colorado. For the families here, we're trying to get some things together, and I'm sure we will in the future, where we can just go out and picket and protest and take our signs and from either the courthouse or either this particular law firm who has been doing this kind of these practices for 10 years. It's crazy. You know, they're robbing my dad of his things. He can't even spend his own money, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
So,
that's
and trying
really
to come after me
that out here
for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's the big thing we have out here in Colorado. They are robbing our families. I was robbed, for millions of dollars in our family. I have a homeless brother who's been sleeping in a camper. All of us got evicted out of our homes. And Scarlett's going through the same thing now. And I have 55 families or so out here in Colorado that have all been bamboozled by the court system. And they're not honoring trusts or wills or POAs. They're not honoring nobody. So that's why it's really awesome when we get an attorney out there on our show, no matter what state it is, that's awesome. That is out for the ward. That is out for that family. We can't tell you enough how many, Leslie Frederigo's is awesome. She's been just, a very powerhouse out there in Florida. And I'm really grateful to get you onto our shows. You said earlier that you had other attorneys that are aware of what's going on. Maybe you can give us a list and we can get them onto our radio show next week, or not next week, in 2 or 3 weeks from now. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. There's always attorneys that are out there that are trying to live their lives, make a good living, and still do the job that they intended to do. So, I look forward to hearing more about what you all are doing here on this show, and I thank you so much for having me on. I definitely appreciate it.
Thank you. I was hearing about the ADA not being included or involved. How do you get that particular group involved, and how do you make this a federal case? My dad is an Army veteran where the VA is paying for his stay.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get
right.
the federal government involved in this particular case?
Yeah.
That's a little tricky. If he's a veteran, I believe that they have representation through the Veterans Administration. If there are, some issues that they're experiencing, the military has like its own system of all sorts of things. And so you may have to find out if he has, if he's receiving veterans benefits, he may have some sort of caseworker or representative that's appointed to his case. And they likely would be a great resource to help you make connections and try to get him some assistance to deal with that.
Okay.
We've had going on in Colorado where there was a gentleman that passed away. He had a stroke, and his name was Ed Baker. And Ed Baker had a stroke out here, and the courts came in, and he was a veteran, and they took all of his life savings. They got him a divorce. They put this guy through pure hell. When almost all the money was gone, his daughter finally got guardianship of him, and he passed away. But he was a veteran as well. And none of the veterans would help him. We worked on this case for days out here. A long time. And we could not get no help on that. So, maybe it's the time we talk to the veterans to see what they're going to do about this situation. Because from what I know of, they have their own, they should even be in probate court. They should have the veterans nursing homes. They should have all that of their own. So I think it's time we talk to the veterans out here and find out. But that's a good question that you answered there, by the way. Anyway,
Absolutely.
We have 5 minutes left for our radio show. Robin, do you have anything you want to add? You haven't had, said too much tonight.
No, I've been listening. It's been a lively show, and there have been a great many things said. It's a gnarly problem, this problem of court corruption. And I see the necessity, there's a necessity for people to do all that they can to prepare themselves to, but it's preparing to do battle. You have to be prepared, and you have to understand that there is this chance that you're going into a corrupt court. And in a corrupt court, there's going to be very little that you are able to do to protect yourself, because the players are unethical and they're not playing according to the rules. This attorney has given us some good counsel and some good ideas and some wise moves that we should take to prepare ourselves. But at the same time, I just want to also counsel people from my own layman's perspective to say, realize that you have to be as cagey as you possibly can and as wise as serpents and gentle as doves, as it says in Scripture. You really have to prepare yourself, knowing that your enemy may be completely, absolutely unscrupulous, lie, cheat, steal, drug you and take everything from you, rob you of everything. And this is the reality of the system that is in place, that very much of it is badly corrupted. And and we have to not only make plans for it, but also at least psychologically, take up arms against the unethical and immoral abuse that happens in our courtrooms every day all across this country and throughout the world. We really, truly have to stand up and speak out and stand up against it. And I'm so glad that we have attorneys that are in the fight with us, and that they're not all arrayed on the side of the Jesus, yeah, liars and thieves. So I'm really grateful to our guests. I appreciate your coming on to the show. I know that this is not the most conducive to a friendly environment for an attorney to come to, because so many of us have been on the receiving end of the wicked abuse of the attorney's privileges that it causes us to be rather jaded. But I think we've been able to hear you, and I'm grateful that you were able to join us. And I hope that it helped to enlighten all of us, including you, to perhaps some of the areas that you may face, that if you have not already, it's a Wild West world out there, and we need all the help that we can get. So I'm grateful to the advocates, and I'm grateful to those who advocate truly as they ought on behalf of their clients in the courts, and we all stand together for what is just and true and right. And so please continue to do that, and we will continue to support you.
Right.
Thank you so much, and that was well said.
Right. Absolutely. And Sandy, can you tell everybody, all of our listeners, you're from a Spectrum Law for Miami. Can you give everybody your information to where they can contact you if they have any issues down in Florida?
Sure, absolute. They can always go to our website, thespectrumlawfirm.com. They can contact our office at our main number. It's toll-free, 888-959-8264. You can also find us on social media if you're an Instagram person, at Spectrum Law, or on Facebook at The Spectrum Law Firm.
Great. Awesome. Hillary, do you have anything else you want to say before we close for the year?
I would just love to reiterate that we are lucky to have you in the probate courts in Florida. And
I love
it. I'm grateful. And thank you so much for giving an hour and a half of your time, and I will be recommending everyone to you, and hopefully you can come back on the show again. Have a great holiday, and what we need is a woman like you, a woman of color who is fighting for people who are underdogs. So I can't thank
there
you enough. Thank you so
much. And Marcy, do you have anything you want to add?
I think Hillary said it all, and you guys, I'm grateful to have you. I look forward to working with you And I will be also sending you people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone.
Safe planning.
Right.
Safe planning is important. And
yeah,
that's the final one.
We are ending our shows of 2020. This is the last show. We will be coming back January 6th again. We're going to be training Michigan probate people will be coming on as well. We're going to be training them to be doing a show starting next year, or we might even have one next Tuesday. I'm not sure yet. Anyway, like I say, justice requires transparency and accountability, and giving up is not an option. You know, and so good night, everybody, and thank you for coming on.
Good night. Fantastic show.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Merry Christmas. You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Here we go. NASA commercial. They were grateful enough to let us use their commercial. Here we go.
Did you know
good night,
that elders
everybody.
And others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.